This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When the spawn meets world.
What up, bros?
What up, bros?
And welcome to Brown Meets World.
When the spawn meets world.
Your Boy Meets World fan cast. I'm Siege.
And I am Tony Coitus. How are you,
sir? Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
You guys. Tony, how are you? How are things? What's life like?
You know what? I'll say this. We're recording this at the tail end of Black History Month. And as you've said in the previous episode, it has been a Black History Month.
It has been a lot. It is a lot to just kind of like process and deal.
Yeah.
So I'm letting all of our listeners know that if you're having a hard time processing and dealing with the world in the way that it is, the fact that they want you to have cereal for dinner and then raise the price of cereal, you know, like all of these things.
The one that really took me out was when I found out Wendy's was doing surge pricing.
Yeah.
And I was just like,
so this is
the reason I need to never go to Wendy's ever again.
Which is so upsetting because Black folk love them some Wendy's. A four for four, which is now I think like a 4 for 6.
The 4 for 4 came through. The chili was good. They had the potatoes if you wanted to like switch it up.
A Frosty? Who don't love a Frosty? And then
the fries and the Frosty, salty
they
sweet.
They just really, we are not promoting Wendy's.
No. In fact, this is my goodbye letter to Wendy's.
I'm about to say, if anything, it goes the way of like, what was it? Like colored ketchup and Doritos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, that was fun when we had it, but sadly we have to move on.
Dave would be ashamed.
Hopefully Dave would be ashamed. I don't put it past anyone. Capitalism. Anyway, you guys.
Anyways.
We're going to do a little morning announcements. Just for you guys to know, if you want to share your thoughts with us or ask us any questions, you can email us at brownmeetsworld@gmail.com or message us on YouTube or Instagram or any of the socials at Brown Meets World. You guys have been really good with your conversations, asking a bunch of questions. Just so you know, I have already shared with some of you, but we got a bunch of your letters. We will be reading those on our Patreon when we do our Pod Meets World reviews. We'll answer your questions. So if you have a question or if you have a voicemail or anything that you want to reach out to us at brownmeetsworld@gmail.com. Okay.
Yep.
Tony, speaking of things that You just need to pause to deal with this week's episode. I honestly,
I knew it.
I could not.
I knew it. And honestly, like having just had our conversation with Sav and revisited the Chick Like Me episode, like this episode, the entire time, we'll get into it. You said, the initial impression was just like, why? Why?
Okay, you know what? Let's tell me about it, and then we can talk about it.
All right.
Tell me about it.
Tell us about it. We're doing some like it hot with Eric and Drac dressed in drag for protection while Corey tries to get the apartment to perfection.
I am very proud of you. That was a really good summary, and I enjoyed it way more than I enjoyed this episode. This is season 7, episode 11, What a Drag. Eric and Jack pose as girls to hide from a goon on campus. In a B storyline, Corey redecorates the apartment, and Topanga has thoughts. There we go. That's it. Speaking of thoughts, what are your first thoughts on this episode?
First impressions. My first impressions are, okay, so as I mentioned in my Tell Me About It, this is basically like taken from the 1950s movie, Some Like It Hot.
I will fight you on this. It is not. It is not. Okay, like, yeah, it okay. is lightly, like the
There's light comparisons.
The Swiss.
For those who are unfamiliar with Some Like It Hot, the idea is that two guys, one of them played by Tony Curtis, my namesake, they get in trouble with the mob, and so they dress in drag basically to hide out from mobsters. So there are parallels within the story. The way it approaches men dressed as women are quite different, but yep. the story in which, like, why these men have to be in drag for their, like, safety is similar. So that's why I mentioned it. And obviously, like, it's not I'm not even mad that they were like, hey, we gotta hide, it's finals week, we can't run. Eric is like, let's dress like this. You know what? I'm fine with it, because there were some things with Sean that I actually really liked. But once Eric starts to make a bit out of it, there's so many problems. And I wonder what you have to say.
There are problems on problems on problems. I want to let everyone know that there were times where I laughed in this episode. So sure. If you want to be like, oh, they're harshing on it or anything, like, I'm not going to say that, like, I didn't laugh in certain parts. However, in 2024, it is irresponsible to have an episode like this. And I understand that it's played for laughs, but when you look at Chick Like Me, like, I looked at Chick Like Me, then I listened to our conversation with Sav, and then I remembered the movie that we watched, Sav's movie of Chase and Jason.
Sure.
And then there's Disclosure, the movie, the documentary on trans rights, made by Laverne Cox. And then you watch this, and you're just like, one of these things is not like the other. Like, even
can I point out something about me. I'm sorry, can I just point out something about what you said, because I thought it was really important. What you're talking about is like, hey, I ingested this episode, and then I considered all of these educational points I've had, and then returned to this episode with new light. Like, that I think is kind of the key. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just thought that was really fascinating that you were like, hey, I went out of my way to ingest other ideas, other media about this subject, and it's reshaped my thoughts on this, is the point we're trying to make. It's not that this episode is bad. It's that we have had conversations. We have heard stories. We have ingested media from people who, you know, are highly affected by episodes like this. And so I think it's just important that we just say, like, hey, there's education that needs to go into having this conversation. That's all. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No. I appreciate that. And the reason why I say it is this. When I watched this episode, there was so much that is, like, said or hinted at that I'm like, oh, that's actually dangerous in real life. That's actually a problem in real life. That's actually, you know, like, there's so much going on that to say, oh, it's just jokes, it's a sitcom, like, we know that not everything holds up, and not something cannot hold up and still be entertaining to you. I get that. But there is a such thing as, like, not only does it not hold up, but it's harmful. Like, the thing that I was going to say is, when I watched Chick Like Me and I listened to our episode on Chick Like Me, there was at least a lesson. There was at least balance. There was still men, multiple men of the cast were learning new things. And this episode, to me, is consistently punching down. This episode is transphobic. This episode is homophobic. This episode's solution is to use someone's attraction to a man who is presenting as a woman, as what is the word I'm looking for? Like, it's used against him as blackmail to another man who is in college, and it's like threatening to ruin his reputation. Like, you can't look at that and just be like, nothing to see here, everything's fine. Sometimes we say uncomfortable things, and it's like, no, sometimes we perpetuate very harmful storylines. And if there is no lesson, like, Chick Like Me, with all of its faults, we came to a conclusion, like, men can watch that episode and be like, hey, not the greatest, but women are people too. You need to
and
Pay attention to
chick
that.
Like me, I think falls into, like, you know, I hate to keep referencing this, but we were just talking to Sav about Chasing Amy and how that movie is problematic yet somehow meaningful. And I feel like Chick Like Me can fall into that category of like being problematic, but also being incredibly meaningful for like people who didn't have better media available to them at that time. Whereas this episode, I don't think falls into that category at all.
You know, it just dawned on me, but like Chasing Amy and that episode came out in 97, both at the exact same time. Mm. And this episode is a 2000s episode. And if you remember, you and I have done reviews on 2000 content before. And the thing about 2000s content is we were at the max of punching a down comedy. Like,
absolutely.
Dude, Where's My Car? Scary Movie. There are several movies where the punchline is this person, their identity is the joke. Their identity is what we're laughing at. And it's like prime 2000s comedy. So like it is a product
and,
of
and also like very like on the nose and in your face. This guy's name is Fat Bastard. He's in Austin Powers and he's funny because he's fat. Like that's correct. The whole thing. It's on the nose. It's like there's no higher level intelligence going into the humor of this time.
Correct. Absolutely. And because of that, I had a lot of problems with it. Let's get into it. So the storyline is that Jack and Eric are working late night at the student union, which didn't they get fired a few episodes ago? So, like, what are we doing? Yeah.
They should have been fired after the monkey incident, if we're being honest. But sure, I mean, they're here.
Again,
okay.
Yeah. So they are working late at the student union. And then you guys, as much if there is one shining star in this episode, it is Andrew Levitas as Luther.
I knew this was going to be our conversation. I knew
who
this was going to be it.
I am who I am, and I will
this
not apologize.
This is the gambling Dan of season 7, and we're back here again.
Absolutely. You won't tell me that that jaw laugh from Andrew ain't do nothing for you? You ain't notice?
I will say... He, you're right. He was an attractive dude, but he also had that attitude that I think is very similar from Gambling Dan. Can I just say, he's great. He did a good job. Yeah. I felt like in terms of the role he had to fill as an actor, he showed up. He did the thing. Part of my problem with this episode is that season 7 deja vu-ness of like, hey, there are so many elements of this that are similar to Chick Like Me, with like the being forced to go on a date with an aggressive guy who isn't taking no for an answer kind of thing. And then you also have the rave on parallels with like an illegal rave again. It's just like, it feels like they took this storyline from this episode, this storyline from this episode, and we're like, all right, what can we do different versions of this? And
it does. I looked it up. This was like, I don't know if it was like a spec script, but it was not a regular writer. I do know that. I looked it up. It was not a regular writer. It's actually complicated to me because this episode has a lot of things that I like because we're doing a lot of things that I've always asked for, but we do it in an episode that is so weighed down by its problems. I can't forgive it. And the only reason why I even bring up the beginning of this is because we get Luther. Luther! We get Luther coming in, looking like a snack. And like Eric and Jack are like, oh, should we call the cops on them? And they decide to do so. And then the cops, you know, optical flip, as they talk about, the cops come, they have
no, whoa, hold on, pause. Luther breaks in with the gang. He makes sure to say this is illegal, just to kind of get over any subtext. And then what happens is that Eric is like, we should call the cops. Jack is like, I'm not sure. And Eric's like, kind of convinces him. Then Jack's like, you know what? You're right. Then they hug. They just take a second to hug.
We're gonna, because he says, did I write it in my notes? There is a moment where he's like, you said something, or it's like, you hurt my feelings or something. And they go, aw. And then he hugs him. And I was like, y'all, my Jarek my Jerick fanfic is just confirmation. It's happening. This is a couple. Like, you can't convince me otherwise.
It's almost as if it's like, hey, we're about to do something scary. Let's just comfort each other as a couple.
Exactly. But anyway, he says, now I feel bad. And that is why this happened. Plus, the whole reason why I even brought up the cops is to say that the cops come and Eric is doing that thing where he's antagonizing the perpetrator. It's like a kid with a dog behind a fence. So, you know, it's almost cartoony in that sense of,
yeah,
what are you going to do? You can't cross this line. And then the dog erases the line and then draws it on the other side of Eric almost. But he goes with the cops, first of all, ACAB, because the cops do not do their job. You want to know why the cops don't do their job? Because Eric says, Jack points out that they called the cops before they actually threw the rave. So there's nothing for the cops to hold them against. However, they did break into the student union.
It was breaking and entering, yeah.
That still counts. I mean, unless you're good looking and white, then,
but then only they can, the rules also, don't apply.
They also let the black kid in the group go, and I'm sorry.
Honestly, you got to travel in groups of white for safety sometimes.
For safety sometimes. But yeah, so, and when that happens, you know, Luther is like, oh, I'm going to get you. And so,
okay,
like,
okay. Did we not just have a story this season where football players were like trying to beat them up? And then they are like, was it mobsters or something where they had to be Amish? Like,
yep.
We keep doing this thing where like people want to kill them. And so they have to go into disguise. And it's like, twice in like in a five episodes, yeah, thing. Like, I don't even know how long ago the episode was, but it feels like it was very recent.
It's so funny to me to know that there are episodes on the cutting room floor, or like there are scripts where they were like, no, we can't do this one, but we will repeat a storyline we just did, not only in the series but this season. Jack and Eric get into trouble and they have to hide, and they do so wearing disguises. Like, again, I feel like part of this is the curse of Will Friedle, in the sense of, because he's comedic, because he can make them laugh, because they want to see Will do things, they're like, oh, okay, what situation can we put Will in? But they do so at the detriment of both Will's acting and the rest of the show.
Well, I would say that they lean on Will way too heavily this season, to the point where it's like an episode like this, where clearly he's making comedic choices, but all of those comedic choices, to your point, punch downs to women, punch downs to drag or trans individuals. Like, it's hard. I guess that community just wasn't even considered during this time.
No.
And like, to be honest, I'm trying to go back to like 1998, 99, like, what other than like, was Will and Grace on? Like,
Will and Grace was on, but like, there's not a lot. A lot of the shows that are on at this time are fringe, they're niche. And Will and Grace hadn't hit its height of its of the series as it would do. We also have like shows like Queer as Folk, which are on, but again, even those shows are mostly about men and queer men, but they're not really about trans issues, and they're not really about like this. Like, to make it clear, because Sat pointed out, a trans man and someone who likes to dress up in women's clothing are not the same thing. But it is important to note the people who are affected, the communities that are affected by content like this, and there is a very large range. It does this thing where it tries to use it as positivity, but it does such a terrible job in its lessons.
It goes back on that. Anytime it tries, it takes a step forward, it takes a step back at the same time. You know, there's a moment where, you know, Jack comes back into the apartment and he's very worried that Luther got a hold of Eric, and then Sean's
Wait,
like, no, he's fine.
Really quickly, with that, I just want to point out that Sean and Jack have a conversation, and I was like, it feels like it's been forever since you two spoke to each other.
Oh, for sure. And it's weird as an audience to be like, why aren't you guys mentioning that you haven't talked in over a year? Like, it's weird that we're just supposed to assume it's back to normal, but like, their relationship is not Like, they haven't had any interactions.
Yeah, that's my whole thing. I agree with you. They haven't had any interactions. They don't, like, they don't mention their brotherhood or anything like that. It is kind of taken for granted that we know and understand the relationships that are going on. But I just thought it was crazy because we get a Jack and Sean conversation. We get a Jack
they
and
haven't
Eric
talked
conversation.
Since their dad died. And yeah. when their dad did die and Sean went off to find himself, when he came back, he made it a point to connect to who? Corey, not Jack. So, like, it's kind of weird to see them just being like, oh yeah, we're brothers. And it's like, no, you're not. You've never been.
But you were saying, you were talking about Jack.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. Jack is kind of freaking out. You know, what are we going to do? Eric comes out and he is in the wig, the dress, the shoes. The thing I want to point out that I was just like, oh, this is actually kind of interesting, is Sean throughout all of this.
Yes.
Because I actually think that Sean's character learned a lesson from Chick Like Me that
Correct.
Stayed with Sean.
Correct.
That was able to take Eric's crazy plan and be like, no, I'm going to take this seriously. Eric, you need to find your inner woman. You yep. need to get in touch with your inner feminine side. And like, I was like, you know what, Sean, like you're coming through in a good way. Like, you're the only person I can depend on in this episode, actually.
I agree. Like, so it was funny because I wrote down that it is interesting to see Sean guiding Eric. And it's like, if you're going to do this, do it right.
Yeah.
And it's not just about putting on the clothes, putting on the wig, and giving yourself a girl name. No, if you want this to be, I don't know, convincing or comfortable or whatever you want to do from this, you have to find your inner woman. You have to look inside of yourself. And again, the way that Sean is written in this, I was like, we actually should be writing to acknowledge Sean's previous history. Like, he should talk about, hey, I think about Veronica every once in a while. You know, like, it would have been nice and helpful because there's a lot of evidence that supports Sean looking at this from someone who has done it himself. And I thought that was great. The thing that I don't like is we don't express why we're doing this. We don't really explain why we're doing this, why we had to go to this level. Like, we use the midterms as an excuse, but also you're not using your same name. You're going to school in this, and you're supposedly convincing all students except Feeny. So are you telling me that you are being counted in attendance for this? Like, it's not making sense.
There is no way that anyone is buying this. And we can get to that later. The thing I want to talk about is that, like, I'm sure there's a segment of our audience who are like, it's not that big of a deal. It's okay.
But it is. It is.
let me tell you this. Let me ask it this way. If Eric came out in blackface,
yep.
would it be any different? Like, because if the answer is yes, then you need to ask yourself why, because there's kind of similarities there. And one thing I thought that was very interesting, and I don't, again, maybe this is falls into the Chasing Amy category of being like problematic, but also touching on something kind of true, is when Sean says, hey, you need to find your inner woman. And Eric just kind of looks in the mirror and is really looking at himself as a woman for the first time. And I hate to make this comparison, but I couldn't help but think of that scene in Danish Girl where Eddie Redmayne sees, you know, like puts on a dress for the first time and has a very emotional response to it. And I'm just like, I feel like this little segment of looking at yourself in a dress for the first time and having an emotional response to it is something that could be like important and powerful and meaningful. Not that the show plays it for that. I just think that little moment is reflective to something that I've seen problematically done and actually done very well in other mediums where it was like, hey, this is actually a moment where you sense something true within yourself when you see the mirror and you see yourself in this dress. And
if here's the thing, that would be if we came back to it at all ever in this episode and or in the season. If we had like if our epilogue was Jack and Sean, sorry, Eric and Sean in their drag being like, sometimes I just feel like dressing like this, you know, like if that was a case, then what we're saying is, oh, I saw something in myself and I actually do want to hold on to it. And it's something worth preserving. But instead we get, hey, I feel good feeling this way. Oh, wait, there's a woman I'm going to let this go. And then we never come back to it again. And I think that that's the problem, is the idea that even if you do have like a moment of truth or a moment of realization, it's taken away, it's eaten into. Because, okay, so we've done this.
Yeah.
By the way, you guys, we will get to Corey and Topanga, but we're going to talk about this A storyline for a little bit. But the thing is, we get this idea of Eric getting to choose. He starts off being like, I'm Olga and I don't shave my pits. And I'm like, okay, again, punching down. But then we give him a moment and he meets himself and he's like, I'm Chantel. And I will, again, I'll credit Sean calls him Chantel. And he's like, it's nice to meet you, Chantel. He's welcoming to Chantel, which is a great thing, because you want whoever, however your friends identify, you want to make them feel comfortable. You want to make sure that they feel like you are accepting of them. So that's good. But then we take that moment away from Jack. Jack doesn't get the same benefit. Jack is assigned a name. He's assigned an identity. And then we don't see him choose his clothing. We see clothing chosen for him. And he is shy about it. And he's not comfortable in it. And part of why he's not comfortable in it is because he didn't get to choose. He was assigned to something. He is being forced into this. And then he is rewarded. I thought this was really important because, again, when we, in our Chick Like Me episode, Sav says, the lesson is that men are rewarded for pretending to be something that they're not, but people are punished for being true to themselves. And that's my whole thing, is this idea of these men. Jack is rewarded because he looks good, because he's good looking, because he's passable in this world, not in real life, but in this world. Then he gets all of the favors. He gets all of the attention. People are nicer to him. Whereas Eric is like berated by everyone, including Feeny.
Okay. Yeah. And I have to say, this again feels very similar to Chick Like Me. This feels like something that was done before, with Corey feeling like he wasn't attractive and Sean feeling like, oh, like, I'm getting pretty privileged. And I think Sav even talked about like femme passing and what that privilege is. My problem really is, like, for the rest of this episode, Eric jumps into this character of Chantel as if he truly has awakened something in him. This is now something that, like, hey, it's not a joke. I'm going to take this on as my identity, talk to my sister-in-law as this, in this identity. And basically, like, after this whole romp, I'm still going to joke around that this is something that I am. It's like, why do all of this? Why have him commit so strongly? Why couldn't this have just been white chicks? Why couldn't this have just been the two of them just like buzzy buddying it? Like, oh, you know, we have to pass while these guys are around. Why does he have to commit so hard if it's not going to go anywhere? To your point, this isn't anything that extends past this episode. He uses it in like a Barney Stinson way at the end of the episode to manipulate a woman into sex, possibly. I don't know. It just feels like there's no reason for Eric to go that hard into character. And like Jack, like you said, he's being forced into this. There's something to that. I like Eric more when he like is talking to Jack and then he'll drop into his regular voice and then it's kind of a bit, versus him saying, no, I'm Chantel, that's who I am all the time, only to drop it once the bit's over.
Well, here's the thing. The reason that he sticks with it, and the show does explain, is not necessarily because he feels like he feels good in the identity of Chantel, is because he is called ugly. And because he is called ugly, he must now find a way to, Chantel must find a way to feel validated. And why? Again, it's this idea, but because again, the episode says that validation, men's validation, is everything. If you're not validated as a woman in this episode, if you're not validated as a woman, then you don't have anything to give. And it is not until another woman, which by the way, I want to point out, where's Angela? Where's Rachel? Where's anyone? By the way, I was like, good on Trina. I don't want any involvement in this. I'm off this week. But
also, I don't think Rachel could realistically look at Will and be like, oh, yeah, you're Chantel. I don't think you're Eric. Like, even Topanga, I'm like, you were valedictorian and you're just like, this is your brother-in-law. You can't see this. Like, it feels so unnecessary for him to go on this journey. Because essentially what happens is we don't follow Eric's journey throughout the rest of the episode. We are now following Chantel's journey to find inner beauty. But ask me, why should I care about that? Why should I care that Chantel feels beautiful? Chantel doesn't exist at the end of the episode.
Here's the thing. What you said is most important. Why should I care about Chantel's journey if Chantel doesn't exist at the end of the episode? That's the key. Because it's not that Eric isn't learning anything. It's not that we are following Eric's journey or that Eric, again, brings back Chantel or learns something about himself or any of these things. It's that we are made to believe that Chantel kind of becomes Mrs. Doubtfire. And now we're doing a Mrs. Doubtfire, but in a way that doesn't even allow for the exposure to come about and for people to deal with the fallout.
The fun of Mrs. Doubtfire is those moments where you see Robin Williams trying to cook and he's like falling apart and you see that he has to like juggle and try to like be a part of this act. Oh, I have to put this cake in my face. That's the only way to convince this person. Like, we're in the joke with him and enjoying the ride with him. Whereas with Eric, none of that's true.
No, I agree. That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is in Mrs. Doubtfire, we see the struggles of a man being hit on as like once he's presented as a woman, not being heard, having to do domestic labor, all the things that we learn in Chick Like Me. But in this episode, I think What a Drag is actually titled, because like we don't get anything. Like Eric's not rewarded for his artistry or not seen more valuable or more intelligent as a woman or anything that would like actually be like, oh, wait a minute, we're kind of discussing things. Well, instead, what we get is someone who's not called pretty and not hit on in the same way that his counterpart Jack is. And because of that, that's why he goes on this journey. It is strictly, again, it's because he was called Bison by Feeny. And then Feeny acknowledges his double D's, and it's like he is in fact being sexualized, and his body is now his biggest commodity. But we don't sit with that lesson. We instead use it as a joke to just keep the storyline going.
Well, part of the problem of that too is Eric doesn't learn anything from this experience.
No
like,
learning.
It would be one thing, like, whereas Chick Like Me, you have Sean coming out of this experience and treating women differently. I can now empathize with what it means to be a woman a little bit better because of this crazy experience that I did. What is Eric's takeaway? Oh, I'm now going to use this to try to pick up women? What? It's such a crazy like direction to go into.
But also, like, all right, so to your point, I want to talk about Jack a little bit, because Jack is made to be Lala, I think is what it is. Mm-hmm. And very reluctant, but is the first to get hit on, which is interesting to me because I do not find Matthew Lawrence more convincing. Like don't get me wrong, Sean, like writer as a woman, made sense. It actually worked. The features worked. But I will say that Matthew Lawrence is, in my eyes, less passing, but he is still a pretty man. And I think there was something about him being a pretty man that made them want to acknowledge his prettiness. And they would say it transfers over. And it's like, that's not necessarily the case.
It feels like they're trying to push the same storyline they did with having a man be attracted to him and having him be uncomfortable with that in the same way they did with, what was his face? Gary. in the Chick Like Me episode. But that's the only reason to bring Jax looks into this is so that men can force. But again, in Chick Like Me, it was purposeful because they were trying to learn the female experience. What was the point in putting Jack into this awkward circumstance if it was only to end up blackmailing a kid through homophobia? Like, it is wild.
They exploit the fact that his reputation is important to him. And he goes, oh, and then also they show Jack to be an opportunistic person. What can I get from this? How can I take advantage of this situation? Because again, all we really know about Luther is that he throws a roaming rave. That's it. That's the only crime he's committed. Again, breaking and entering if we want to go there. But like, again, it's college. Like, and the cops don't seem to care on this campus. So the only crime that he's committed is throwing a party where he invites other people to have fun. But according to them, that is worse punishment and being ridiculed for his sexual attraction. We don't see him overstep in the way that the other guy did. We don't see Luther push it or try to sexually assault Lala or any of these things. The only thing we see is him say, hey, I've taken you out. I'm trying to woo you. Do I get anything from this?
I've taken you out and I bought you shoes. Why? Why did Jack have him buy her Lala shoes? Like, that's not even something Jack can utilize afterwards. It would be different if he was like, hey, I took you out. Like, I bought you all this stuff. Like, I bought you that big steak dinner. Like, implying that Jack was like having fun with it in a way. Like, we don't get to see the date. We don't get to see him learn something about Luther. Apparently they spent hours together and we never saw it. So what happened during that time? Like, there's so much that we could do with like either having Luther be someone that Jack can empathize with and be like, hey, I don't feel like going through with this. I just want to be honest with you. Or you could just have a thing where Jack is like really like pressing this dude and getting the most out of him to like make it worse for him in a way that could have been fun too, with like Jack coming in with like all of these bags full of things that he got at the mall and then telling Eric like, well, I made out okay. Like, you could have done something, but like all of it is just to get to the blackmail. It skips everything to get to the blackmail.
Because here, and this is why I refuse to compare this to Some Like It Hot, because you told me it was like Some Like It Hot and inspired by Some Like It Hot. I expected Luther at the end to be like, nobody's perfect. Like, that's what I want from this. If you
or gave for me Luther to fall for Lala in a serious way, in the way that Some Like It Hot does.
In a serious way, but then also it's not just enough to fall for Lala. It has to be that you like this person for who they are, who they're presenting to you. So even when Jack does, like, if Jack would have taken off his wig and then been like, I'm actually a dude, and Luther would have been like, hey, nobody's perfect, or whatever, then A, we have consequences for the two boys doing this and using it as a tool, but then also, we are not punching down, we are saying this is an accepted way of being and living, and instead, we use homophobia to be like, your reputation is so important to you. What will your boys say when they find out you went out with another boy? What will they say when they find out that you were interested in another boy?
And
they
your reputation will never recover, evidently.
But again, what's really important is, and I thought this is so important that I had to bring it up. He says, I'll kill you. And this is important because that actually happens. There are lots of people who, like the trans panic, the gay panic of it all. There's so much narrative of men dressing up as women only to trick other straight men, only to get other things. And when those straight men find out, or when they are confronted with the fact that they were attracted to someone of the same sex, they get violent. And this is, like, to me, I thought when he was like, I'll kill you, I was like, this isn't funny. There are people who died this year because of this.
Yeah.
So it's not a joke in the way that I know that you all want it to be. I know that it's supposed to be lighthearted and fun, but when they are killing people for doing this very thing, if this storyline actually took place on a campus, there's a good chance that Luther could have killed Lala. And
the violence should have escalated, not de-escalated at the point of, in order to reflect actual life. Yeah.
Correct. Absolutely. Or again, as I said, or we can do it a some like it hot way to where Luther's like, hey, I knew all along. I just thought you were hot. Like, again, there's something around acceptance that's fine. If you want to, if you, at the end of the day, if they were like, Luther knew the entire time and was okay with it, or Luther didn't know, but at the end of the day, he just found Matthew Lawrence to be an attractive man. Again, all of those things are fine. I would accept, I don't like it, but I would accept this episode more. But it's that they use it against him and they use it as blackmail that I have the biggest problem with.
I would even say another part of this is, and you kind of mentioned it already, was this idea that Eric ends the episode with like, okay, so now I'm going to go about tricking people to get things that I personally want, and how dangerous that is to go along with the narrative that's already been destructive to this community. Like, we can do better. We can do better all around. And I think the other thing is that this episode felt very like, this felt like a very B storyline that was the A storyline. Like, it's like you're giving me an appetizer for dinner and I can tell. And that's how I felt throughout this entire storyline.
Cereal for dinner.
Cereal for dinner. Damn, it just keeps happening.
So there's a few more things that I want to acknowledge. One is the idea that they pit. Again, they pit two women against each other, even though the two women are Jack and Eric.
Yeah. It,
Lala and Chantel having to compete for attention. And I was like, again, that's very telling about the writer's room. And that's very telling about how you see women that, again, even when Jack is getting the attention, he's very much like a, well, what do I get? What are you going to buy me? I want your car. I want money. I want items. I need materials in order for this to be worth my time. And then you have him being like, I got asked out on a date. And Eric being like, lucky, rubbing in my face. I get it. I get that I'm not beautiful. So I want to talk about that. But then also the idea, again, we are going to say that Feeny recognizes Eric, but no one else does. And including Topanga. And Topanga has a long conversation. I was like, this is the longest conversation Topanga has had with another woman in forever. And again, if we had Rachel and Angela talking to Topanga and Chantel comes in and joins the conversation, I would probably allow it. The longest conversation we give with Topanga that's with another woman that she's not related to is Chantel.
And they kind of squander this opportunity because the past few weeks, you had Topanga really struggling in her marriage. Yep. And like this week, it was very lighthearted and it was just like, ha ha ha, he chose a weird paint color. But the thing that they could have done was had Eric check in with Topanga and Topanga be like, hey, here's a girl I can talk to who's not in my immediate group, who doesn't have this like notion of who Corey is that maybe I can open up to a little bit. You could have had Eric learn something about Topanga. You could have strengthened his bond with his sister-in-law by having him kind of decoy his way into her circle and have her open up to him. You could have done something to make this worth it, because at the end of this episode, I don't feel that any of this was worth it. This is a skip. This is a hard skip. You can miss this episode and you will have missed nothing of importance. All you'll need to know is that Corey painted the apartment. That's the only thing you need to know to follow along.
Hard skip. If I don't think there has been an episode in quite some time I am so against as this episode. And I'm like, but here's the thing. Like, so, and I want to say this because I say all that, but Danielle is acting her ass off in the scene where she's being vulnerable with Chantel. She's acting greatly. Danielle is doing some of the best acting she's been able to do in quite some time. And again, it's all during this farce. And it makes me angry because it's like, hopefully they will give her more to do in the later episodes. But like, as of right now, I'm like, why am I just now getting to know you with a character that you, in this very conversation, you're like, hey, I won't be here next week.
Like, I don't like it. I don't like that they have her connect with a girl. Again, make a friend during a time in her life when she kind of needs friends and she needs community. that will not exist. And at what point is she going to learn that her brother-in-law was lying to her to that degree? Like, she should have a Sally Field the whole time. Like, she should have that kind of reaction. Like, at a certain point, she's like, hey, Corey, we need to separate ourselves from Eric a little bit because I don't know what he's capable of. Like, between the painting thing last year and this, like, this guy is off the rails.
See, it's so funny because I felt like there is a world in which Topanga knows. If we made it to where Topanga knew and she just was going along with it, the same way Feeny does. The same way where it's just like, no. It's Eric. I don't need any explanation. I don't need a backstory. I'm going to take you at your word. And then if later on in the episode, we see Topanga walk by Eric and be like, hi, Chantel. And you know, like this whole thing, like that's fine. Because what we're not insulting the audience's intelligence. We're not insulting Topanga's intelligence. And we're saying that the bond and the conversation that we're had right now can be built upon. They're actually like Topanga is accepting of her brother-in-law for who he is. No questions asked. There is love. And her brother-in-law is able to connect with her. And that bond is going to last because they're family, no matter what. Again, that's a great lesson that we can walk away from. But instead, we cut it at the legs because we say, nope, Topanga's buying into this. She has no idea. And she's being nice to a stranger, which is fine. I love that for her. But it cheapens the conversation.
It cheapens it and it just makes her seem dumb. It makes her seem dumb when Feeny is able to clearly see that this is Jack and Eric, but no one else is able to. Topanga is unable to see something that Feeny is able to clearly see. It'd be one thing if this was white chicks. It'd be one thing if like everyone saw them as females. If like even like Feeny was like, hey, I don't think I know you. And then like Eric drops it and like reveals, and then Feeny had that realization and reacts to it. That could have been fun too. But to have him say like, I see who you are in the same way he did with Sean makes everyone else seem stupid.
Including Topanga, who again has been looking at Eric's face since she was 6 years old. You're going to tell me that she doesn't notice that Eric, that Chantel and Lala look exactly like, or that Sean didn't call anyone and was like, you will not believe what they're up to. Look again. The last thing I want to say is Jack overcompensating at the end of the episode. Because again, we have a chance to actually have a real conversation.
Sure.
Into which, because Sean acknowledges that Jack is overcompensating and he says, hey, what are you doing? Why are we doing this? And
can again, I say that? Oh, I just, Jack felt so much like a Lawrence brother in this scene. He felt like he was acting like Joey in this scene of trying to be macho. And I just thought it was really fun to kind of see him basically, like, I think he's trying to do De Niro, but it felt like Joey Lawrence to me the entire time.
No, I agree with you there. And I will say, again, it bothers me because we get some of the most Jack we've gotten in a while. Yeah. We get Jack having a conversation and playing pool with Sean. Like, why? I love this. I love that.
And Sean being able to be like, hey, you're clearly overcompensating for your masculinity. And like, Sean's kind of ready to have the conversation. And at no point does Jack deepen his relationship with Sean and choose to. He just keeps playing the bit. And it's like, Sean's not acknowledging the bit. He's trying to have a real conversation. And I guess you're just too uncomfortable to. And I can almost see why Sean doesn't fuck with you, because if Sean is that sensitive, deep person that he's now become after season 6, I don't see how he could be with someone like Jack, who is this kind of meathead, all of a sudden, kind of like really superficial, kind of dumb guy.
It's so funny that you say that, because a lot of people have been telling us, I'm not saying that we don't get there, that Jack is like this meathead and he becomes dumb. And I was like, no, that's not what I'm getting from this. I'm not getting dumb meathead Jack in this episode. In this episode, I'm getting insecure Jack. In this episode, I'm getting, my looks have always been my calling card, Jack. I am known to be one type of person, and I got attention and success in this other avenue, and that made me feel uncomfortable, especially if we go with the Jarek storyline of it all, which is just like, I would have loved if Sean would have been like, hey, by the way, I understand that you're overcompensating, but I love you no matter who you love or no matter how you love. If you would have said, hey, by the way, I'm accepting of it. It's cool. Not that there's a problem
or
with that.
Or Sean just being like, you wish you could pull off a dress like me. Like something like again, that something would have been so fun and great.
Well, yeah, because what we're saying is it's not a problem. And again, we're acknowledging Sean's history with it. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a conclusion to the idea of Jack overcompensating. Jack doesn't come off as dumb to me. He comes off as insecure in his masculinity to me this episode. And I can fuss with that, but I don't like that it doesn't give a conclusion.
You know what would have been great if Jack was doing his macho thing and then Eric came in with a group of girls that he became friends with as Chantel, and Jack was like, oh man, maybe I should reconsider. Like something like that would have even been a better way to end the episode in terms of just like, I don't know. Like, I just feel like him ending on this, oh, I need to overcompensate to make up for this episode thing is a bad way to end this. I don't like that being the end of it. And I don't like Eric's end to this episode being, I'm going to go manipulate a girl into sex.
Well, to that point, it is interesting to me because I'm like, is this the first Asian woman we've had in some time? Like,
yes.
I was like, oh my God. To the point where it's obvious, because I was like, when was the last time we had an Asian woman?
When Eric dated one in season one.
That's what I'm saying. It was insane to me. And so I just wanted to call that out because of the fact that I was like, all of a sudden we have a diverse cast in the college, which we've never had before. Okay. Are you ready to move to the B storyline?
Yeah. To answer your question, Linda was his girlfriend in season one that was Asian, but I don't know that we've had an Asian character in the show since.
I don't think we have. Okay, Linda. No, Linda. B storyline. B storyline, we have Corey decorating the dorm. That yellow was terrible. And here's the thing. Very rarely do I'm like, we need to make this the A storyline. But I'm like, I feel like there is something here about being a newlywed, wanting to please your partner, and your partner going above and beyond, and you not knowing how to deal with that. But I don't like that. I don't like Corey's approach of being like, hey, I didn't talk to you about this. We've seen it with Alan in the whole, I bought you the minivan that you asked for. But we don't see we don't hear Topanga say, oh, we talked about yellow. And that was one of the options. We just see Corey do this thing. And Corey being like, I wanted to surprise you. I want to keep surprising you. She says, we should talk about this. He goes, no talking, surprises only. And I'm like, no, 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 no. And I feel like this was a good opportunity for Topanga and Corey to actually have a conversation and develop as newlyweds. Instead, we don't have anyone teach Corey the lesson. We just have that inherent thing of he reached the decision on his own. He reached the conclusion on his own. There's no need to talk to him about it. There's no need for him to learn because he learned on his own. He knows her well enough to know that she wasn't liking it. So he just changed everything again without having a conversation. And this is important. When you are in a relationship with someone, you need to have the conversations. We've been watching Love is Blind and like all these other reality TV shows, and people don't like having the conversation. They want someone to know them inherently. They want someone to just look at them like, I know what you need. I know what you want. And it's like, no, real relationships require you to have a conversation. You should be able to talk. Like, they actually removed Topanga's lesson of having to confront Corey and talk about it. Like the whole conversation she has with
Chantel. That's what I mean. This is all pointless. Yes. It doesn't matter because, like you said, Corey learns the lesson on his own off camera when no one's around. He learns that, you know what? This like anxiety inducing yellow that I've painted this apartment, which he said he bought economically, which I think is actually something to kind of note, this idea that like when you're decorating and your budget's limited, sometimes you have to make decisions. Like, he's clearly working within his budget. Like, I think Corey as a husband is actually very likable in this episode in terms of how he's trying to please Topanga. But again, he doesn't have a moment where he's like, someone Sean says to him, like, did you check in to see if Topanga really wanted this? And you have no point where Topanga's like, we've been together since we were three. Why would you think this is something I would want? Like, well,
like, to your point,
yeah,
I
she
would
needs
love...
to communicate, but he doesn't know her if he's doing this. Like, that's another part of this, is that he clearly does not know his wife.
Well, here's the thing. We gloss over that. Because at the end, he does. At the end of the episode, he could tell. Just inherently, she didn't need to say anything to him. And this episode gets better. This storyline gets better. If we have Topanga do that thing in sitcoms where she's like, before we go inside, I have to say this. I have to get it off my chest. I have to have the tough conversation with you. And then he opens the door and he's like, I know. Thank you. Thank you for telling me. Thank you for saying it. You know, like, if we give her a
and
chance,
he needs
to actually
communicate. Yes, and he needs to communicate to her, like, in that moment that you're talking about before the reveal, being like, you know what, it's so important to me to just know what you want. Like, in the future, just know that, like, I just want to make you happy. That's what's most important to me. Like, that conversation needed to happen, and it not happening again, it makes this storyline seem moot. It seems incidental. What's the point? What's the point?
What's
they have
the
a new
point?
Apartment. Yeah, and they have a by new the apartment. Way, we a few episodes ago, Corey couldn't change the sink. Did you notice this motherfucker did electrical? Like, so much around that apartment. What budget did he have to furnish the apartment, to change it out? Like,
we're not gonna talk finances. No. Because again, if you pull one thread,
but
it's gonna
directly prior to this was all about the fact that they didn't have money to do this shit. So for them to have one episode where it's the main concentration, then this episode where it's like, oh yeah, I redid the entire place, no big deal, I did it by myself. It's like, what was the point in the previous episode then with the sink? Like, there is no connective tissue.
To your point, absolutely that. It doesn't make sense that we last week didn't have money, didn't have a budget, didn't have anything. We don't see them get a job, as we've talked about numerous times. So where did the budget for redecorating even come from? I love the idea of Corey taking ownership and them making this apartment. Because again, I kept saying, oh, it just looks like you need to clean. You need to get a carpet cleaner and some Clorox and just get to work. Like, that's what it feels like you need to do. So the idea that they have him redecorating is good. I cannot let it go that Corey doesn't allow Topanga to participate in decorating her own space. And again, it is seen as romantic. It is seen as loving. And for those of you who are like, we're being too hard on Corey, by the way, this isn't just Corey. If any other character had said this, I would say the exact same thing. It is not romantic to decorate an entire house without your partner that your partner has to live in. She doesn't get any say on the throw towels. She doesn't get any say on the couch, on the color scheme.
Why would she? She didn't have any say in her wedding. She didn't have any say in her location. She didn't have any say in anything that's been happening in her life for the most part. She has no agency.
And that's my problem. My problem is this episode does that thing that a lot of shows and movies at the time did, which was like the grand gesture is romantic. And it's not, because it leaves you out as the partner. You're not partners. You're an accessory. And I think that's really important to just call out, because Topanga deserves at bare minimum to choose which throw towels she has in her apartment.
At this point, Topanga deserves what she got. I don't know what to say. Like, I have no empathy for Topanga anymore. She chose this life.
No, she chose this life. Okay. Speaking of which, is there anything else you want to say? Any other final thoughts?
No, this episode was bad.
No.
It was a bad episode. Like, I didn't think it was necessary. It doesn't advance the storyline for any character involved. Yeah. We're not touching on anything. The thing that's the most consequential thing about this episode is that the apartment got remade. And that wasn't even the A story. So what was the point of this?
I agree. What was your Bron moment of this episode?
What was the Bron moment? I don't know. I guess Eric's closing line of just like, hey, everyone experiments in college, right? Like playing into the vulnerability of college students and their sexual identity and trying to manipulate a girl into giving him something under false pretenses. Like, have we not? We could do better. We could do better.
I agree. For me, there are one, the episode as a whole, again,
as a whole,
far
yeah.
inferior to Chick Like Me. And Chick Like Me is not great, but it's far superior than this episode. And then there's a moment where Chantel bends over and we see her underwear. And not only is it made for a joke, but Danielle reacts because she's like, oh, that's nothing I wanted to see. And I just like everything about it. I disliked what we were saying. I disliked that we showed it. I disliked, like, it was wrong on so many levels. What is your Feeny lesson for this episode?
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
Gun to your head, if you had to choose to watch like this episode, Killer Bees, or the one where the driving one where Eric is with the mean girls from season one, like this is ranks to me among those episodes. I know we're not at the grading portion yet. I just, like, as you're talking, I just can't help but thinking, like, how bad this episode is, like how much it sucks, along with like the legacy of sucky episodes we've reviewed, like the worst of every season. Like, I feel like this is going to be the one we circle back to at the end of the season being like, I think that was the down point of season.
So it's so
seven.
Funny that you say that, because again, I'm kind of torn, because from a production standpoint, I feel like we do really good casting with Luther. I feel like we allow Jack to have a storyline with his brother. We allow Sean to interact with people other than Corey or Angela. We allow Danielle to have a conversation with another female presenting person. Like, and Danielle's acting is good. There's so much that I really want to give credit to just on the behind the scenes of it all.
Maybe. But I just feel like as an episode, it kind of doesn't function as well as the other ones do. And to your point about like the lesson, don't know, communicate, I don't know.
Yeah, but so to answer your question, I want to say that I first of all I would choose Killer Bee over this, or the bees, or whatever it is. I would choose almost any episode over this, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
I just wanted to say that I will be grading lower, like, this is a bad episode, however it's not all bad, and what it taints for me is what makes, like, the storyline, the fact that the storyline does such a bad job with the second iteration of dressing up in drag is what makes me, like, mad at this episode, because there are so many other things that we could have done, there are so many other lessons that we could have said, and we are actually allowing for dynamics and setups that you and I have asked for so many times, and they give it to us in an episode that is absolutely skippable. So, okay. So I will say my lesson is, the lesson is, you were supposed to communicate. Like, that is one of the things that you're supposed to take away from both, I'll say, from Topanga's storyline, from Jack and Eric's storyline, talking it out, communicating, is supposed to be important. The thing is, we fumble the ball on both ends.
Can I just bring something up that I feel like is a major crux in this whole thing? The whole episode is dependent on Jack and Eric being at the student union after hours when this break-in takes place. When we open up the episode, they look bored. They look as if they're both, like, waiting for, like, their shifts to end. Meanwhile, it's closed. So it's like, what were they doing? You couldn't even have them, like, cleaning. You couldn't have... What were they doing? All right.
I'm just saying, Sean is now living in the apartment, so they need
their private time. All right.
Just be friends. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Okay, so what grade are you giving this?
F. They failed.
F? Ooh, I think this may be... our first F. If it's not our first F, we've given so few Fs. So few Fs.
I've given Ds. I've given D minuses. I truly just feel like the series is better if you don't watch this episode.
I will not disagree with you there. I will not disagree with you. Again, I want to give credit to the casting, to the acting, to the idea that we are doing storylines that you and I have always asked for. I want to give credit for that. But I will not give anything but further than that. So you're going to get a D from me. This is a D episode in my mind. I think this will go down as the worst rated episode we've had. I look forward to like looking into that. But yeah.
It's definitely amongst the bottom of the barrel for me. And it's a lot of things. It's not just that this episode doesn't age well. It feels repetitive. It feels repetitive in a lot of ways. Like every element of it, we can trace back to another episode in the series and be like, this episode did it better.
Correct.
We saw it with the dressing up and drag thing. Chick Like Me did it better. Corey painting the apartment, not asking, like, Amy and Alan have had better storylines than this about the same topic. So it just all feels irrelevant. It all feels stupid. And it all feels just like a distraction from better storylines that could be discussed. Like, I don't know why we're not getting into fixing up the apartment. That could have been the A storyline, and you could have made it a whole thing where Corey tries to be fix it and he doesn't learn. I don't know. You could have done something way more to make the transformation of the apartment, making their home finally feel like home, which was the lingering question when they were having that tuna fish sandwich. And we were just like, well, what's next for this? Like, what's the conclusion? Like, this was the big conclusion to that episode, and it feels like lackluster. It feels like whatever, and it just feels like this could have been more. Whereas the Jack and Eric storyline clearly should have been the B storyline. It should have been something, I don't know. There's a thousand different things they could have done with Jack and Eric, and I don't feel like either of these characters are better having gone through this story.
I agree. There are two things that are really important. One is I can't believe I almost went the entire episode without acknowledging Luther's last name. Luther Montolfo. Shout out to Erica. She got her name in. I was like, oh, hey! it's Luther Montolfo, which I thought was really funny.
Wow. Shout out to Erica.
And then to your point, I agree. There is not a single part of this episode that isn't derivative of something else we've already seen. And what's even worse is you are doing a Some Like It Hot homage without committing to it. Again, simply having Luther be accepting and being like, nobody's perfect, and him actually doubling down on his attraction to Lala / Jack, that is your conclusion for this. And that at least makes it, like, it doesn't make it infinitely better, but it does make it accepting. It does say, while you chose to laugh at this, this man is living his truth, and his truth is I would have gone on a date with Jack no matter how he presented.
Can I ask you an extra question? We usually do the grades and the lesson and all that shit. Like, how, like, to pull from our old movie makeover podcast, like, what's the makeover? Like, how do you make it better? Because in my mind, I feel like it needs to be restructured from the ground up in terms of, like, why not have Eric and Jack dress up as something else? Like, you have to remember, this is TGIF. We have seen Urkel as a woman. We've seen Urkel as a robot. We've seen Urkel as a kung fu master. Like, this audience has seen leads dress up and go in disguise and take on characters so many times that, like, it's played out. Is this even the decision I would make going back in terms of, like, this issue that they have with Luther? Is there something else besides the disguise? Could they outsmart Luther? Could this be a cat and mouse game that, like, pays off and strengthens their relationship? I don't know. I truly don't know. And maybe that's why this episode got an F, because, like, usually I can think about things I would do to make this episode better, but the only way to make this episode better is to change everything about it.
I think we've given several examples of things that they could do to make this episode better. I think we've talked about, like, making the apartment the A storyline, the idea of having Angela and Rachel be there for Topanga to talk to, the idea of, if we are going to do a Some Like It Hot, committing to the Some Like It Hot ending, the idea of actually having Sean even go back and talk about Veronica as if he misses Veronica, or as like, you know, like just say her name and be like, oh, Wozwoyski was a really important time in my life. But all of those things would require a commitment to wanting to tell a better story. And that's the problem. The problem is, yeah, we didn't want to tell a better story. We wanted to tell this episode, and this episode is skippable.
Sorry, guys. They all can't be wins.
They are, and here's the thing. You know, honestly, to your point, I will say this. A lot of people are talking about how, as we had this conversation when we met up with a few of the writers the other day. You and I went out. We went out with writers, and we were having a conversation about television and what you used to get when you had 22 episodes. And the thing about this episode and the thing about the 22 episode order is you got episodes taking a swing. Not all swings hit. Some were a miss, and some gave you like crazy one-off episodes that are almost like fever dreams, and you're like, why do we do this? Nothing really matters. But they still were like experiments. And I will say that I'm learning the value of having episodes that weren't good, episodes that took a chance, episodes that were a little wacky and out of place, because it allowed people to have some fun with established characters, but it also allowed the show to learn and play with, again, different dynamics, different pairings, different lessons, different A storylines. And I do think that there is something to be said about having room for that. And with our latest 10 season episodes, we don't really have a lot of room for failure. Either you're good or you're bad. And if you have enough bad episodes, you're not renewed. So
I will say this to that point. As much as I think this episode is just like not good, to your point, I prefer having 22 episodes where half of them are great and half of them are kind of whatever, that are consistent, that week after week I can go to, that I don't, oh, a season finale, I only have to wait 3 months into the next season. We are in a situation with television now where these motherfuckers are like, oh, hey, we're going to take 2 years off in between seasons. You're going to get 8 episodes and be lucky if you get that. Like, correct. When did this happen? Streaming has ruined the amount of content and that we get. Like, the idea that HBO is paying, like, millions and millions of dollars for one episode of television, like for like the Game of Thrones TV, Our Last of Us, they're throwing large numbers at like one single episode and they're only doing 8, and it's just like, I don't know if I like this better. I don't know that I have to like wait and wonder when Severance is coming back. I don't like that, like there's no consistency. And if going back to the old model means that we get episodes like this, but I get consistent content, like, I prefer it. I truly prefer it.
I will say that I think it's really important to note that it's not streaming. It's studios and it's greed. Because there is a world in which we did the exact same thing and we rewarded TV shows and writers and actors and all this other stuff. But they were able to not have to pay as much. Mm-hmm. Again, we just are even having the conversation about residuals in a way that they didn't have before. And it was greed. Greed is what's ruining television and movies and content. And I think that's really important, because there is nothing wrong with streaming when done right, but we don't want to do it right. We want to squeeze as much as we possibly can out of creatives and not give them their due. And that's what we're dealing with right now.
It's also just like a disrespect for fans, a disrespect for your audience, to have them just hanging on for 3 years and expect them to remember what happened in the season before Stranger Things. Like, what is going on with television now to where, like, it, you know, it's so interesting. Like, recently, the streaming services were releasing like their top streamed shows, and they were all like, Gilmore Girls and Grey's Anatomy and Suits and Supernatural. And I'm like, and everyone's like, why are these old shows the ones that are doing well? And I'm like, because they're dependable. Have you seen Grey's Anatomy or Supernatural? They have like 17 seasons. They're dependable. I can just put this on and just binge it, and it will just be a journey I can continue to go on, versus this thing where it's like, I'm about to commit to characters that may not come back after one season if not enough people streamed it. I don't even know if I want to invest my time into this until it's done. Like, that's the new relationship with TV, and it's not a good one. I don't think it benefits the audience. I don't think it benefits writers and creators of these shows. I don't, to your point, it's all greed. It's all greed.
Absolutely. All right, you guys, it sounds like this conversation should extend over to our Patreon. If you guys want to hear more of this conversation or our Pod Meets World reacts, go over to our Patreon at patreon.com/Pod Meets World, where we will continue these conversations, and we're going to get into our homework. Homework time. What homework do you have?
This has kind of been out for a while, but I just finished Loki season 2.
Okay.
It's all right. It wasn't bad. It was okay. I watched it. It was all right.
I love that your recommendation is, I don't know, it was something.
It's what I've watched since the last time we recorded, and I don't know if it was like monumental television or anything. I don't know if it was super important. I just know that I watched it, and
watched it. It was a thing.
I have been having like Marvel movies on just in the background as I've been editing or I've been working, because it's just kind of like, I don't need to pay attention to them. They're on in the background. I've seen them already. And if Iron Man 2 is on, what the fuck do I care about Iron Man 2? It's just on in the background. That's the thing. We were a generation that the TV was just kind of on in the background all the time. You had no control over what to watch. You just had to wait for good things to come on. I was raised with just like getting used to just the TV just being on. And I kind of been doing that with like using Marvel as my like background thing for right now, because there's just hours and hours of content. I could just throw it on and forget about it. And so I watched Loki and it was fine.
Okay. I mean, here's the thing. I've heard mixed things, specifically when it comes to Loki season 2. I haven't watched it yet. I did watch all of Loki 1. I didn't think it was as great as everyone else did, but I did like it. And I'm willing to check out Loki season 2. I feel like, again, if we're just talking about streamers, we're about to have all of these consolidations of the streaming services. It's going to be interesting the next couple of months, even when it comes to content, on like what we're gonna get, what we're not gonna get. And
I will say that for those who gave up on Marvel, don't bother. Like, if you gave up, continue to give up. Maybe check out Deadpool later. That's probably gonna be the best thing we get. I am way more excited about Dune 2 than I am about anything I've seen.
See, here's the thing. I never got into Dune.
I can't even watch the first movie without falling asleep. Yeah. But the reviews about Dune 2, this is going to be, next week, I'm going to tell you what I actually thought about this. But the reviews for are like, it's the best sci-fi movie of all time. It's up there with Star Wars. It's redefining sci-fi as a genre. And like, the reviews coming out for this movie are so over the top that like, that's kind of my homework. Everyone go see this movie and see if it matches up to the reviews, because I didn't like the first one.
Here's the thing. I feel like this is another one of those things where, and I will happily eat my words.
You feel like this is the Flash again?
I know. It's not like
I feel like it's the best movie ever.
I don't feel like it's the Flash. I do feel like we've kind of lost the plot in terms of critique. And everything has to be the greatest. Everything has to be fantastic. Redefining cinema, the latest XYZ, Star Wars. And I'm like, sometimes a movie could just be good. Like, we could say, hey, it's good. It's worth your time. Like, if you said, hey, it's good, it's worth your time, but it's good acting, I'd go check it out. If you're telling me it's the best thing that's come out since XYZ, then you're setting up an expectation that I don't know if you can meet. And that's my whole thing. Like, again, I had this conversation with someone recently where it was just like, it is okay to have a good movie just be what it's trying to be. If you told me Doom 2 is a good follow-up, then I'd be like, all right, cool. Sounds cool. I'll go see it, maybe. But if you told me it's the greatest thing that I've ever seen, then I'm going in and I'm going to sit and I'm like, impress me. And if you are anything less than the greatest thing that I've seen, I'm going to give it a negative review.
Then that's literally going to be me this weekend, though. That's it. It's me sitting in the theater, like, impress me, movie that didn't impress me with the first one. Like, I'm just commenting on the hype. That's okay. It. I'm not endorsing.
Speaking of, my homework is going to be twofold, because I watched all of Netflix's Avatar, The Last Airbender, the live action version.
Okay, yeah.
And I will say, I did not watch the original cartoon at first. I couldn't get into it. It is like 63 episodes. Yeah. Never watched it, but everyone talked about it. They were like, CJ, you love it. It's great. And I just couldn't get into it. And I saw a lot of people having negative reactions to the live action. And I was like, let me check it out and see, because I feel like this is one of those things where like a fandom is holding their property too close. They're not understanding that this isn't really for you. It's supposed to be used as a gateway for other people. And I felt like it did just that. I watched the live action version and I was like, I would not watch 63 episodes of this cartoon, but I was willing to watch 8 episodes of the Netflix show. Wow. And it got me interested. I was like, actually, I enjoy this world. I like what I'm learning. So I went back and I watched the cartoon. And I have to say, I'm not going to lie to all of those of you who are screaming at your TVs, computers, laptops, whatever, right now. The animated series is infinitely better, but it's infinitely better because it has a sense of humor. It has like, it understands both the weight that it's trying of the story that it's trying to tell, but also that because it's such a heavy and strong and interpolitical, queer, dynamic story, that it needs to have fun with it and it needs to be funny. And I will say that there is a difference between the live and the animated, and I enjoy the animated more, but I absolutely appreciate the live action for getting me interested. So, my recommendation is, if you've never seen Avatar: The Last Airbender, check out the Netflix show. If you like simply the ideas behind it, then go back, check out the animated series, and you will appreciate it even more. And
I just don't know that anything's going to compare to the 2010 movie with by M. Night Shyamalan. I just feel like that was the best of this content.
And you guys can tell with that comment that we're done here. Tony has officially just signed off. He's not really trying to participate in any real helpful way. So we're going to wrap it up there.
Can I just say, I don't know what it is. I don't know if I just ingested a bunch of like whatever content this week and then we did this episode, but this episode just got me in that mindset of just like, none of this matters. And I kind of been ingesting a lot of media like that. I wish I had better recommendations. I really do, guys, but this is what I've been taking in.
It's what you've been taking in. And with that, again, you guys, if you have better homework recommendations, reach out to us at brometsworld@gmail.com or at brometsworld on any of the social platforms. As I said, you guys, continue to support us on Patreon. Continue to like, subscribe, leave reviews, do all of the things. We truly, truly, truly appreciate hearing from you. And with that, I'm going to wrap it up and tell you guys to dream.
Cry.
Please try. Trying is so hard. But if you're going to try, do good.
Do some damn good. Later, bros.
This episode of Broad Meets World was produced by Siege and edited by Tony Curtis. Broad Meets World is a Two Free Tokens media production.
Bye.
Bye, buddy. Hope you find your dad.
When the storm meets world.